You're listening to Quest to the Core, a podcast about leading with intention, clarity, and courage from the inside out, where the leadership journey gets personal, reflective, and powerfully real. In every episode, Jonna and Simone invite you into thoughtful dialogue that challenges assumptions, sharpens self-awareness, and equips you with actionable insights to lead with greater impact. Now, here is today's episode.
Welcome back to Quest to the Core. I'm Jonna.
And I'm Simone.
Have you ever noticed how some leaders seem calm and focused when everything is changing, and others get very tense the moment plans shift? That isn't just a personality difference. It is something called AQ, the adaptability quotient.
What we mean by adaptability quotient is our ability to determine what's relevant, forget what isn't relevant, overcome obstacles, and to adjust to change in real time.
Change in real time. And in our world, where the pace of change is accelerating, adaptability isn't a luxury. It's actually a necessity. Advances in technology have shortened the life cycle of business competencies. And in the 1980s, the typical business competency was relevant for approximately 30 years. That number is down to less than 5 years now.
That is a massive shift. And if adaptability is no longer an option, the question now really becomes, what exactly are we talking about when we say AQ, adaptability quotient? And adaptability isn't just about staying calm under pressure.
So today we're going to explore the intelligence of change. So what AQ really measures, how to design the ecosystems or the environment where adaptability thrives, and how leaders can build a future-ready mindset for themselves, but also for their teams. AQ is about the intelligence of movement. So the ability to learn, unlearn, and relearn faster than your environment shifts. So that speed and grace at which we can adjust our lens really is what we're talking about when we say AQ. And I often think of this as more of like the dynamic form of intelligence. It's not so much about how much you know, but it really is how fast you can like reshape what you know when the environment shifts or when the situation shifts. So it is about your ability to almost be proactive in situations.
Well, when you said that, you know, AQ is the intelligence of movement, like what comes to mind initially for me is movement of the body. To walk, you move your legs. To wave, you move your hand, move your arm. And that's not the movement that we're talking about here. It really isn't like your mind being willing to shift from one lane to another to act. What are those things that you're willing to let go of that you hold to be true and then learn newly for that next thing? And so the intelligence of movement with your thinking, with your mindset.
That results in action, right? So it's how fast you can change those insights into action or put it another way, right? Reframing whatever challenge you're faced with as an opportunity to learn so that leaders can make sound decisions in those times of uncertainty.
And so how does that look? What does that movement look like?
I look at it as psychological flexibility. So when we think about our ability to have multiple truths or possibilities all at the same time, right? Like, and that requires us to draw from both cognitive and emotional agility inside of our brain. So having that flexibility to reframe, to recognize patterns, but to have that emotional regulation and emotional agility to be curious, to be able to regulate what we're feeling internally, but then to flex, right, without losing that connection when it comes to the people around us as well.
Would it be safe to say that you're really exercising emotional agility and emotional intelligence to be better at adaptability?
Absolutely. I think it's emotional intelligence. It's emotional and cognitive agility. I think it's even social intelligence as well.
And so it seems like this one really wraps a lot of those other concepts together. Because, you know, at work, we say we're looking for someone who's adaptable, someone who can manage change. And that's not really an item to check on a list that, okay, yes, they have adaptability. You can, but you can't at the same time, because it comes with these, it's carrying these other things along with it. You almost have to really be good at these other things to produce this behavior that's observable of being adaptable to change.
Absolutely. And I think there are people who are adaptable in certain situations, but maybe not so adaptable in other situations. And I think that is where you start seeing the layering of all of those other intelligence, should we say, and the ability of doing those when it comes to adaptability. Because if we are lower in maybe that social intelligence, then situations that I encounter individually, I may be able to adapt quickly. But if I am involved in some kind of social situation, my adaptability might be a little bit less or lower or more difficult because of my social intelligence. I don't know if that made sense.
No, it does make sense. Looking at it from the flip side, if you're working with someone either as a parent or as a leader to someone that's in your charge, and you know that their social abilities might be limited. So let's say you're working with someone who might be autistic or someone who might be on a spectrum. You know that some of their social capabilities might be lower. The processing is different. I would think that you could potentially assume that the adaptability is almost automatically going to be lower as well, too. So when you're introducing a change to someone who may have lower social capabilities, that you need to expect that change is going to be harder. So you need to adjust how you're going to introduce the change to them.
Absolutely. And I think it's easy for us to say change is constant. Everybody just needs to get on board. It's just here, mm-hmm. right? But we can't discount our brain in this whole thing, right? Mm-hmm. Because our brain is really what is going to help us as individuals, but also us understanding what does change look like in the brain and how does that happen is going to be an important aspect as a leader or a parent trying to help someone through a change. And I think most of us probably have heard it before, but change follows the grief curve, right? So our brain experiences change just as it does with grief. And so it is really about how do we recognize that, understand that, and help people recognize and understand that as well.
Yeah. So how do we do that? How do we help others recognize it?
Well, when you think about change, it's going from resistance, because our automatic response is, oh my gosh, something's changing, right? It is a threat to my survival. That is our brain telling us that we need to put our heels down and we are not going to change because we want comfort, security, all those great things. And really helping people move from that resistance to being ready for whatever the change is. So there is a concept out there called the adaptability curve, and that's kind of that movement from resistance to readiness, which starts with that awareness piece, right? Mm-hmm. Noticing when change is happening. And when we talk about adaptability quotient, it is about recognizing that change before it actually happens to us. So not after the fact, but before, having that awareness to almost sense that this change is coming. And then that adjustment piece is the ability to kind of retrain our brain to experiment, to test, to almost go through design thinking before the change occurs so that you're prototyping and you're able to almost fail before you actually have to go through the change. So that adjustment is more about rebuilding those pathways before the change actually happens. And then the last piece of the curve is the assimilation, which is, again, integration of whatever the new norm is, kind of thing.
Thinking about it like the grief curve or the change management curve is really critical, because I think both of these, you know, move together. I want to bring back what you said a moment ago about just noticing it before it happens to you. We all have that little gut. We've got that sense that, hey, something's up. And oftentimes we just barrel through, because if I just stick my head down, we keep going, everything's going to be okay. You can actually miss a lot of cues of what really might be coming, and miss a lot of opportunities to do what you said around that experimenting and testing. Well, what if this one thing happens? and then try something out. So you don't have that opportunity if your head is down and your head's in the sand of not wanting to really to acknowledge what's really happening around you until, you know, you hear people say, I'll deal with it when it comes or when it's announced. Well, you can. It may be harder to work with it that way. But if you have that time to be able to think about it, play around with it, experiment with it in your brain, then when it actually does happen, you've already got all of these other potential possibilities to work with them.
Well, I think it might be good if we talk a little bit about sensing the adaptability compared to overthinking a situation. Mm-hmm. I think there might need to be a distinction between that, because there are some of us who can overthink a situation and think of all of the negative possible outcomes that could happen, and we are planning for the worst. That's not exactly what we're meaning.
No, that's in the vein of catastrophizing.
Yes.
We don't need you to catastrophize.
No, we don't. Mm-hmm. This is really about being able to tolerate that ambiguity so that we can sense what's coming, right? And be able to adjust and then help others adjust as well.
Well, I think that's where curiosity comes in with the core framework. Like, curiosity is really important at this point. When you sense something, just start talking about it and asking about it so that you're not doing the catastrophizing.
Well, I know LinkedIn Learning put out an article that talked about the adaptability quotient and how it is now cited as a leading predictor of long-term success in complex environments. And I think if we reflect upon what environments inside of organizations have become, as well as just society in general and trying to manage a family or even individually managing through our current societal environment, it is very complex.
I think the reason why it makes you successful is because when you experience mistakes, you're willing to grow from that versus just sitting in the mistake. We're trying to double down that this is how we're going to avoid this mistake from happening. So by growing your adaptability skills, you're not going to try to hold fast to the sacred cows and whatever your company may call them. You're willing to actually allow it to grow or adapt or to really fit with the environment is emerging into, you know.
And I think we're going to start seeing more and more research come out about, you know, it's not about outperforming your competition, which ultimately that's what we want to do, but it's really how do we outlearn the competition mm-hmm. in order yeah. to differentiate us inside of the market that we're in. I know it's tempting to think about adaptability as an individual, personal strength and something you either have or you don't, but adaptability can be learned. It is something that we can practice, and when we're placed in those situations and we go through that reflection and the learning piece of it, we get better at it. But there's also a social component to it as well. So it is the ecological system that we're in or the environment that we're in. So even the most flexible person, so the one person you think of that can adapt to anything, they typically will even get stuck if the environment or the system that they're in is so rigid. Which means if leaders want more adaptable people, then they have to build the space for it so that people can be flexible. So the next question is, where does about adaptability grow best? And you might be surprised to hear that it's not inside of one person. It's actually in the ecosystem we build as leaders.
Within a team, adaptability really is not a solo act. It's a team sport. You have a team, you know, team of five people, one is excellent adaptability, four or not, it's not going to work. Leaders need to shape the conditions for adaptability. You've got to have that psychological safety. That's been a major theme in a lot of our podcasts. You need to have learning loops, that permission to evolve. So that means you got to have that flexibility to be able to make a mistake. And, you know, when you look at organizations, younger organizations or entrepreneurial types of companies, they have to adapt quickly. They will not survive if they can't adapt. The difference here is that their adapting is really in the form of reacting. something happens mm-hmm. and they realize that okay, that's the wrong thing to do. So let's not do that again. It's very easy to let go because of the impacts that they know that will have to their organization. They have to change or else they absolutely will not survive. So that's a small entrepreneurial company. Let's think about larger, mature organizations. How many times have you been in a larger company and you're doing these processes that you know are inefficient and they're costing money, but they're done because it's the process and that's the way that it's always been done. Now, a mature company, you can label as adaptable, is they're actually going to look at the mistakes that happen and take that mistake and use it as fuel to learn. So rather than giving them a bad performance review because they made a mistake, they're going to look back, what was the root cause of this error? And what needs to be adjusted so that this error doesn't happen again in the future? So companies that are in a Lean Six Sigma environment have this built into their mechanism. It's a mechanism to learn. And you know, the Peter Senge's book on learning organizations, you can read all about that. That's really what they're talking about is adaptability, is how do you build adaptability into. You've got the large companies, their method for adaptability is they're accepting mistakes as fuel for learning. The smaller companies, it's a reaction. I think that's when you were talking about the ecosystem, that's what you've got to look at, is what are we building for our people and for our kids, for our organizations that we're in?
Yeah. As you were talking, I was thinking about those departments or teams where the leader is just like, my whole team is just so resistant to change, and that, you know, they're like, well, this is the way we've always done it. And if you hear somebody say that, or if you have said that yourself, then I would turn that back on you. And I would ask you as a leader and say, what kind of environment have you created that has allowed the environment situation to be in that space of, this is the way we've always done it? And then how can you shift what you're doing, the questions that you're asking, what you're allowing, what you're not allowing, to create that space, to create that ecosystem where people are actually excited to not do mm-hmm. things the way that they've always been done?
When your system is rigid and not flexible, the people are going to get burned out.
We also have to keep in mind that everybody has different adaptability thresholds, right? There are some of us who can adapt really easily, who thinks it's fun, who really gets energized by it. And there are others that it really drains them. And this is where we talk about emotional and social intelligence is an important part of adaptability, that we have to be able to recognize the different speeds at which people adapt to. And we have to be able to build that trust, provide that clarity, and do it in small, bite-sized, digestible moments, not create this massive change and then, oh, we're going to create this adaptable environment because that's not going to work. And make sure that you're not adapting just for adaptability's sake. We've heard it before of like, oh, here's the next best thing. Oh, my leader read this book, so now mm-hmm. we're going to do these things for 3 weeks because they read this great book or they listen to this great podcast.
Yes. Well, listen to the Quest to the Core podcast. And
exactly.
Here's what they told me to do this week.
Here's what they told me to do. Check the box. Yes. We're going to do these things for this week. People are going to just roll their eyes and say, here's our leader again. And it's the flavor of the week or the month. So being very intentional, which I know we talk about intentionality a lot, but being very intentional is extremely important when it comes to adaptability and change.
And it's the time horizon that they're in, I think, is really critical, because someone at the top, the CEO or the head of a division, read the book, they got it and they wanted to implement it right away. So they tell people about it in an hour meeting, and then they want to know why they're not implementing it. And what that leader fails to appreciate is that at the moment that they read the book and how they got their insights were built upon the context of their current life, the challenges that they're facing, the problems they're trying to solve, and also the cumulative experience of them being a human. And it clicked when they read it. So all of that change management, that adaptability curve was happening in a, it seemed to them in an instant because they got it when they read it, but it really wasn't. It was over time based on their circumstances and their experiences. So when they introduce it to their division, their company, and it doesn't happen in a month or a quarter, they tend to then let's shift to the next thing. And that's the worst thing to do. They need to then shift their focus on what is that environment I created, that intentionality that you talked about. So the leader now is responsible for holding that space, creating that space so that those principles can arise and helping to reinforce it, helping whatever that end goal is you're trying to do from whatever that book that you read, you've got to hold that space long enough for them to come through that part of the process for themselves. Because the ideas are sound. Whatever it is, there was something about those ideas and something about the challenge that you were owning as a leader that message really could work. And I'm talking generically because I think any of them can.
Absolutely.
Because the leader, it spoke to the leader. Where it fails is the system didn't fail. The thing in the book wasn't something that didn't work. It was how the leader who got that insight tried to then implement it in their area. So that environment is so, so critical. As a leader, once you've created this environment that's adaptable, it's not so that people can react faster when things happen. It's so that they can anticipate what may be coming. And they're going to anticipate because they've seen an error and gotten curious about what caused it. They've seen a trend out in the world related to their business, and they got curious about why might that be coming up now. And so that's what building that intentional environment can really produce for a leader.
So it really is about that ecosystem. It's about how do we as a leader, how do we as a parent create the space so that people can learn how to be adaptable. It is not a switch that comes on and goes off. It is a skill set that has to be developed, just as the child learning how to do some basic life skill, or as an employee learning a new program at work. It is going to take time. And the more that we give people space, the better that they will get at it.
Yes. I think a lot of leaders think of adaptability of, oh, something, you know, a bad thing happened or something happened and they were able to react fast. They could catch up fast. That's a method of adapting, but that's not truly adaptive leadership. It's not really what we're talking about here, that adaptability quotient. It's around first learning how to react, right? React quickly, but it's then expecting that change and making it a part of your next design and not interrupting that as a rhythm. So as we've kind of led our listeners to this point, then what's next? How can we get to that space?
Well, it's a shift. It is going from change management, which you talked a lot about, to really change readiness. So old models of change management looked at change as an event, and you looked at your change management strategy and your change management communication plan. Mm-hmm. That's a tongue twister. And making sure, 6 months out, you communicate this and 4 months out, you communicate this, which is all great tactics and strategy when there's a massive change that everybody knows is coming. But today, change is part of the environment. Change is part of every single day. So adaptability can no longer just be a project that we're working on, a change management project that we're going to have a meeting on every Thursday morning. Adaptability becomes a way of being.
As you were talking, what came up for me is the traditional or the older view of change management is a company telling employees, here's how we, quote unquote, we are going to change. In other words, here's how I want you to change. And that was effective then, very effective, like putting those mechanisms in place. With the way work is changing and how fast it's changing, that's not good enough anymore, is telling them how we want them to change. It's creating this environment so that they can adapt and expect and anticipate there's new shifts coming. It's really that future readiness.
And I was sitting here thinking, as you were talking, the old, you know, the old models, right? It was plan, communicate, implement, stabilize. Whereas now it is sensing it before it's going to happen, experiment, test some things out, question what we learned, what we got from it, how do we fail, how are we going to do things differently, so that the end result is evolving as opposed to just getting to a new status quo.
Exactly. Now, I still want some good old traditional change management when you're building my airplane, when you're talking about the processes inside of that. So we're not talking about all environments need to, you know, come to this more fluid nature of adaptability. There is still the time and the place and the need for, you know, process control, change management, very strict following these, because there's a massive safety concerns inside of it. Those models, though, do not work for some of the, a lot of other types of work environments. If you're on a work team that's producing a product or providing a service, that model might be a bit too rigid for the day-to-day changes, but that rigidity is needed for the larger scale changes that would be happening in the same organization.
Absolutely. It has to be a good balance. I think the key is that future-ready organizations are designing themselves for that movement, right? Mm-hmm. The intelligence of movement, as opposed to creating these structures that block movement. So there has to be a good balance between, but it's normalizing that uncertainty and being able to model the learning on a regular basis. So really being able to coach through that evolution as an organization shifts, so that we actually shift from fear to readiness, and we want people ready.
Yeah, so how do we build that future readiness for people? What can they do?
Creating habits, rituals, all of those great things. I know that we've talked about several of those in other episodes, and you even mentioned learning loops in a few minutes ago. Again, learning loops really are just that cycle of testing something, trying something out, reflecting, understanding what we learned. I think that goes back to mistake audits, right? Looking at, okay, this mistake was happened, get curious, which you mentioned that as well. But I think using feedback as almost forecasting indicators of what's to come. So being intentional with feedback that you're given, and maybe coaching individuals into thinking about the unknown of, it worked in this situation or it didn't work in this situation. So let's think about, what does the next situation look like? How about for you?
The after action reports. I come back to those and I'll relay them over into the medical field. You know, in the medical field, they do, you know, postmortems, and they'll review a case. And so the doctor's up there presenting the case. Other people are learning from that. They don't do it just because it's something on a checklist. They do it because they actually want to come and learn to help prevent. Same thing with mishaps or accidents in aviation. They'll build a simulation. And so pilots are practicing some of those events that had happened previously. And it's helping them to unlearn some things and learn new ones, so they can reframe, like, that error as a data point. What do we need to unlearn or let go of? And I don't think we talk about that enough. We talk about, what do we want to learn and add? But I think, you know, particularly with how fast things are going, it may just be worth, like, dropping some things too, but deliberately talking about that we don't need to continue to learn that anymore. We need to unlearn this action.
The last one I thought about, which kind of is interwoven in many of the things that we've already said, but pattern recognition. Mm-hmm. So recognizing those patterns as an individual or as a team, I think, can help when we know we're going to react this way in this situation because we've done it several times, allows us to have that data point in order to sense or be ready for what's coming. I think understanding patterns is so important because we have to remember the human brain craves predictability. The human brain wants an easy pathway so that they know how, not they, it, the brain, I don't know. So the brain knows how to help us respond or react in a situation. So remembering that, we need to actually build those new neural pathways or help people build those new neural pathways by repeating the exposure to change that's manageable so that people can increase their tolerance to whatever the change is. And then change becomes less threatening. Mm-hmm. And people will start almost being excited about the change, especially those that we know are never going to embrace change from the beginning. But once we start this, they might actually be a little bit excited for it.
I think they could, because it then becomes the predictable, like the change becomes the constant. Or so if we're going to consistently look for the errors, the people who crave consistency get it that way.
Yeah. And if we do adaptability correctly, if we model adaptability correctly, it can be contagious. Mm-hmm. Other people can pick up on, other people can model. And when we do it correctly, then we are actually multiplying, right, that trust in other people. We are multiplying that resilience in other people. And ultimately, that leads to better ideas, innovative solutions. So it's not really about the strongest is going to survive. Mm-hmm. It is about who is the most flexible in their mindset is going to be the ones who survive.
Yeah, that willingness to being able to adapt. Those are the ones that will still be here. So let's shift now to ground this in the core framework. So by bringing curiosity, openness, reflection, and embrace, those are the four ways that you can actually build adaptability from the inside out. And we talked about curiosity a few moments ago around when people were sensing their environment. So when you sense it, just get really curious about it and like notice those potential patterns or those signals before anything happens. So that's curiosity. Let's shift over into openness. In relation to adaptability, openness is not just learning new ideas. And it's really being willing to let go of those old ones as well.
Well, and I think it's being open to what those old patterns are. Mm-hmm. I think that is the foundation, because we all have those things that have helped us be successful. And it is our go-to reaction or our go-to response. And so it really is being open to recognizing that those things that have helped us be successful may be the very things that we have to shift, which ties nicely into the reflection piece, is recognizing those patterns, which we've talked about, and recognizing those routines that we get into and potentially helping others see that as well.
Well, and reflecting on, now that I see this pattern, what's the impact of that pattern?
And yeah, impact is huge.
And what's the impact if I don't let go of it? Or what's the impact if I do let go of it? And really sitting with those what ifs. And then, so it brings us to the last one of embrace. And that's where adaptability, you know, really comes to life and becomes real for people. And it is all about what happens when we step into that new experiment, even when we have no idea how it's going to end. And the embrace piece is a really critical part of that entire ecosystem, that if you don't take that last step, all the work that you've done before that is for naught.
Which leads us to our reflection. And I think if we start off thinking about where we're spending our time, so asking ourselves, am I spending more time reacting to what's changing, or am I preparing for what's coming? That's going to be able to tell us if we are sensing or anticipating change, or if we are just reacting to what is right in front of us. A couple of other things to think about is what needs to shift in me as an individual so that I can meet what's changing around me. Because adaptability does start inside, but we need the space in order for adaptability to flourish.
So this brings us to the end of our episode today on adaptability. Next week, we're going to focus on a topic that's really going to pull adaptability and on the episode from last week, the courage to let go. And it's a topic that challenges absolutely every leader. That's delegation. So why is it so hard for leaders to let go, even when we know the benefits of delegating?
So stay tuned. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
I am looking forward to it as well. Do not forget to access our resources on our website, www.questtothecore.com. You'll find discussion guides, book recommendations, and other items as well.
As always, a very special thanks to Grammy-recognized hit songwriter Cliff Goldmacher for our theme song. You can reference his information on our website.
In our parting thoughts, just remember, every leader faces change, but how you move with it defines your impact. The goal isn't to brace for change, it's to dance with it. Until next time, stay curious, stay open, keep reflecting, and always embrace the change.